I have in the studio a Benjamin or Ben Orman.
Ben is good.
Yeah, Orman. Yeah. Am I right?
That's right. Yeah, that's right. The brothers.
who's written a book? He's also a musician. He's got CDs. He's got songs to his name, and he's done a bit of walking. I notice on the front cover here, Ben, there's a pair of fairly well worn boots because you've gone 1,000 kilometres.
Yes, they were pretty worn when I started. In fact, so yes,
people say you should walk in their shoes, but I don't know about those ones. I might give them a miss.
They're horrendous, yeah. Yeah, they're artefacts now for the museum. Yeah.
But you've written a book called Footnotes, and it's about your journey on 1,000 days. You had tried bands and being in the music industry, which is not, it's a bit of a tough gig, isn't it?
Times. Oh, yeah, yeah. Yeah, it is.
And you decided you had a lovely life up there on Mount Tambourine. That sounds like a lovely place or something.
Oh, it
Mount
is.
Tambourine.
It is.
But you decided to take a walk. Give us when did this thought strike you?
It was 10 years ago. I should clarify, it was 1,000 kilometres and not 1,000 days. That
did
would
I
have been
say
a very
1,000 days. Yeah. 51. Oh,
it makes me sound a lot more impressive, though. It was 51 days.
It was out of 1,000 days, I think. Yeah.
Yeah,
anyway,
that's
go
right.
on.
I got the idea reading about the old bluesman. I'd recorded an album, and I was sort of stuck for how to promote it. And as you said, I'd been in bands, I'd played gigs, I'd done the tour circuit, and you know, playing to a sea of backs and three people nodding and clapping at, you know, the end of each song, and I just couldn't get excited. I wanted to do something different, and I read about these old bluesmen back in the very early part of the 20th century. These guys had been sharecroppers, and they would walk around the country with their guitars on their shoulders, just stopping at towns as they would go and play, and they made their way to Chicago that way. And so this fired in my imagination.
So are you talking about Muddy Waters or earlier
than
that?
Prior to Muddy. Robert Johnson, yeah. Tommy, Charlie Patton and Son House. These guys who, they would just walk into a town, they'd play in the back of the fish shop or, you know, of a nighttime in a juke joint or somewhere like that.
Yeah.
And for them, their, I guess, definition of success wasn't so much as selling lots of records, because back in those days it was still such a new medium. Their definition was really how much they enjoyed themselves, and that seemed to me like a great way to go. So yeah, I walked out the door essentially and made for Sydney from the Gold Coast.
So you're a modern day bluesman.
Yeah, except I don't play blues, which kind of ruins the whole. Yeah, it's I don't know what I play actually. It's a weird hybrid, but. And it's not just them, but there's a long history of wandering musicians, obviously going back to the Middle Ages and the minstrels, the troubadours, the buskers in Rome. We've got records of them playing in the crossroads, the Compitales.
The crossroads. Now that's the Highway 61 and Highway something else, isn't it?
The crossroads are a big factor for musicians,
isn't it?
Yeah. Going back a long way.
I stayed it's almost getting up to a year now, in Clarksdale.
Oh, really?
Which you may have heard of.
Yeah, yeah, very much so.
Went to Red's Juke Joint. Do you know Red's Juke Joint?
Yeah. No, I don't. No. Well, haven't been there.
I think it's called Reds. I'm not sure. Anyway.
Yeah.
But it's Bill. He reckons it's the last. He says it's the last juke joint in Mississippi. There's another one in Louisiana, but this is the last one.
Yeah.
And it was great. It was. I went back there every night. I just was there for 3 days.
It is amazing to hear it in the place where it was born, isn't it? Yeah. At Reds Juke Joint. I love it.
Yeah, it's great. Because there's one that's sort of on the tourist thing that says, you know, you got to go to not Morgan Fairchild, Morgan Freeman.
Oh yeah,
Morgan Freeman has built this nice sort of blues place in Clarksdale. You know, and it's.
I think I read about that. Yeah,
yeah, yeah, yeah. And he owns it, and he put money up for it, and so forth. And that's what I was going to go to, but then where I was staying at the Shack Up Inn, they said, "Oh, you like blues?" I said, "Yeah, of course I like blues. What am I doing here?"
Yeah.
And they said, "No, you go to Reds. Reds is really I recommend. There's a really good band on tonight." So I went there, and then the next morning I went to a little breakfast place, and there was Red, and he's a big African American guy with dark glasses. He never wears anything but dark glasses.
Yep.
And there he was at the back of the breakfast thing, and he comes over to me and he says, you're coming tonight. He says, I've got a really good band for you tonight.
Put on just for you.
That's right. I thought, well, I will go tonight. And I went there every night.
Yeah. Well, that's it. And it's such a fertile place for music. Within that, I think they call it the triangle, where blues and jazz and
country as well.
And country. Yeah. All of these
rockabilly
things.
I couldn't get over how many people were there. I'm just. Do you think we should play? What's one of your favourite blues tracks from this area?
There's Poor Boy. Long Way From Home.
Give me the artist. Hold on. Give me an artist. Who do you want to listen to? I'll put one on. Then we'll play you after that. Yeah.
I'm trying to think of who did it. What about Son House? He had Grinning in Your Face.
Grinning in Your Face, here we got that.
Yeah.
Let's see, there we go.
This is the essence of the blues right here.
Yes.
Yeah.
People grinning in your face.
Oh, it is the essence, isn't it?
Your mind, people grinning in your face. Yeah, just bear this in mind. A true friend is hard to find. Don't you mind people grinning in your face? You know your mother will talk about you. Your sisters and your brothers too. Yes, don't care how you're trying to live. They'll talk about you still. Yes, but bear who this in mind. A true friend is hard to find. Don't you mind people grinning in your face. Don't mind people grinning in your face. Don't mind people grinning in your face. Oh, there's bad hooters in mind.
I'm loving it. I'll just we want to get on to a bit more of your story, I suppose. So
sure, yeah. Isn't that amazing?
Yeah, it's inspiring, isn't it?
Yeah.
And these people, I just have the music in them. I was just saying off here. So really great. Is he still there? There he is. He's still
there. Yeah.
I'll go back. I haven't heard that one. So I'll add that to my list of things to listen to. So anyway, you went off on this journey.
I did.
What did you find?
I found trouble first.
Did you?
Up. Yeah.
In River City?
Yeah. As I think with any endeavor, you have an idea before you start. This is what I'm going to do. It's going to go like this. Mm. And by the time I reach Sydney, this will have happened. And of course, no plan ever goes smoothly. I walked into a dreadful storm in Byron Bay. For a week, it rained. Worst storm to hit the region in 30 years. Towns were flooded, you know, animals were pairing up and all the rest of it.
Oh.
I ended up cooped up in the women's toilets and down at the beach.
You weren't doing a deal or anything, were you?
Bad deal gone down. No, I had to get in there.
Why would you muse those alike?
I know, yeah. I've got a reputation to live up to.
That's right, or down to.
Yeah. I sought refuge in the toilets. The women's toilets were better because there's room to hang your clothes up when everything's wet. Yeah, there's a more space. And fortunately, at 4 a.m, I'm the only one there, so I wasn't sort of given the bum's rush. But there was a lot of that repeating as I went. The weather played a big part, and I suspect it has always played a part for wandering musicians, that you're so at the mercy of the elements. After the first month, I'd run out of money. For 3 days, I kind of run out of food. I had a small amount of peanut butter left in a jar that sort of saw me through. Made it to a town called Crescent Head, where the woman that ran the fruit shop, I had 40 cents left in my pocket, and that was my phone call home for someone to come and get me. For some reason, I said to her, "How much fruit can I get for 40 cents?" And she looked at me for a moment and then handed me a bag and just said, "Fill it up." And
that was good.
And from then, things started to turn, and getting on the radio and selling albums for money instead of food, and it gradually turned around.
And were you thinking at that stage you'd be writing a book?
No, not at all. It was all about trying to sell the album. But about halfway through, I started writing letters to my girlfriend at the time.
Yeah.
telling her about this, all these wacky people I was meeting and all the adventures and the bushfires, the dingoes, the snakes and the...
God, you had all those.
Nudists. Yeah.
Man. What sort of snakes? Did you know about snakes? Did you know they were bad snakes or good snakes?
I kind of treat them all as though they might turn on me. But it was a diamond
Probably
python.
Good idea.
So, and, but
oh,
it wasn't,
that should have been all right, shouldn't it?
Yeah. And he wasn't in it at the time. It was just his skin. So it was okay. And the book came from the letters that I'd started writing about halfway through. By the time I got to Sydney, I was starting to think, you know, maybe this could become something else. And my girlfriend at the time, who's now my wife, which is lucky because she's in the book, and it would have been awkward if we hadn't stayed together.
She said, look, maybe you should write.
Yeah.
And did you meet a publisher or did... You have to go and find somebody?
I had to go find a publisher.
And how easy was that?
Oh, the road...
It's not easy, is it?
Oh, it's a rough road. Yeah, years. It takes years. You do your first draft, and then you do your second, and then you do your 28th draft. Eventually, you start writing pitch letters, and you start pitching to publishers. And Michelle at Odyssey was lovely enough to say, look, we'd love it. We'll take it on. So, happily, it found a home.
Yeah, I'm just opened randomly here at a page. I awoke with a start, sitting up on the empty beach, looking around, trying to get my bearings. The waves crashed on the sand, sky scored by shining stars, and in my mind, the final seconds of the dream played repeatedly like a badly grooved record. The man in the black hat had been me, his face revealed in the last frame of the dream that had been mine. But I hadn't looked good. I'd grown prematurely old, emaciated and worn. Horrible. I slept poorly for the rest of the night.
A preview of things to come.
Yeah, sounds very interesting. Yeah. So that was a bit of footnotes by Benjamin Allman. I think perhaps I should ask you, what would be the most frightening experience that you had in this journey? Or the most worrying?
The septuagenarian nudists were quite worrying. I think probably the scene that opens the book, there was a bushfire inland.
Should have opened the beginning, shouldn't I?
There was a bushfire inland. This was around the Great Lakes region, and it meant that I was forced, if you like, to hug the coast.
So Foster Tonkari?
Exactly. Okay. Just south of there. And there's a beach called Bluey's Beach. Now, Bluey's beach is named for a cow that fell off the top of a cliff and ended up crashing into the surf, and presumably not making it, but achieving fame posthumously and having the beach named after her. That's quite a high series of cliffs there all the way to Seal Rocks, and with the bushfire and land, I had no choice, and so I tried to cut along and almost imitated the cow. Several times up, I was up 30 metres up and started to fall, stuck my arm out instinctively, held on with my arm in a snake den, which is where the diamond python skin came from,
right.
As a bit of a reminder.
Oh my goodness.
As I ended up turning around and walking into the bushfire anyway. So
It
was the better option.
So, so when you say you walked into the bushfire...
Mm.
Did you burn?
No. Well, fortunately, they'd mostly put it out. Or at least they'd opened a road through that section.
Right. So
but what
got
I love about
a gap in the bushfire.
I did.
Yeah. Oh, that's good.
And I love about the country people. They said, "Okay, bushfire's off. Great. Let's go ahead with our BNS ball." And a woman stopped to pick me up and said,
waiting for
"You should
BNS
come along."
Ball.
I know. Nothing stops them. It was great. Yeah.
Oh, you know, and certainly the hospitality flows quite freely, I recall being in a couple of those.
Oh, yeah. Yes. Yeah.
But a few bad things happen. Anyway, look, Ben, thanks so much for coming in. We're getting a bit close to I don't actually have news anymore, but I wanted to go at one of your tracks. And I think you're saying Fragment of the Afternoon might be the one to play.
I think that's the way to go.
Right, well, I'll see if I can bring that one up. It's on the good old CD. Sounds lovely. So this is with the band or just...
This is just me doing everything, yeah.
Well, thanks, Ben, for coming in, being on 2CR on the daily. It's been great having you in.
Thanks, Rod.
Your book is called Footnotes and it's available everywhere, is it?
Absolutely.
We'll go and we'll listen to your song.
And you tell me that the sky is an ocean for the moon. But all your words are thick with engineers, like children furnished with the wrong. So I close my mind, it's easy to forget what I could never find. All this is just a fragment of the afternoon I spent with you. Sold you my soul for what it's worth.